Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Two men are beaten on the East Bank Esplanade. A man poses a police officer and carjacks a woman. And a giant dinosaur catches on fire.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, mortals, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, May 25th, 2011. A Seattle man is being charged with multiple felonies after police say he impersonated an officer and carjacked a victim. U.S. Marshals say Michael Beach pretended to be a police officer and then fled to Hillsborough to avoid capture. Amy Allwell says Beach confronted her across from Seattle University in broad daylight. She says he showed her a gun in his pants and told her he was an undercover Seattle officer about to do a drug sting and demanded her car keys. Allwell said he refused to show his badge, and at that point she was shaking and crying. She says Beach gave her a hug and his phone number and disappeared. Allwell says they know who he is. They know his number, name, everything. Now he won't be able to get away with this again, hopefully.
He tried to avoid capture by fleeing to Hillsborough.
Yes.
It's like
from
fleeing.
Seattle.
It's just. It's like fleeing to a pawn shop. That's like fleeing to a place that specializes in, like, 24-hour bullet wounds.
Well, apparently they captured him Tuesday night, last night at the Hillsborough Fred Meyer parking lot off Tualatin Valley Highway, which is not far from his brother's home. So apparently he was fleeing to the home of someone.
So he's really smart is what you're saying.
Yeah, the marshals captured him as he and his brother were going to get groceries.
That's great. Maybe I'll just flee to this place that sells gold rope. Nobody ever looked for me there.
People living in the neighborhood, who probably knew nothing about these people and still really don't, had this to say, according to Hillsborough resident man on the street, George Baldwin said.
He's an area man.
Area man, George Baldwin said, everything from people that impersonate, rob, steal, counterfeit, whatever, they're just scumbags.
Well, who can disagree with, I'm sorry, what was the area man's name?
George Baldwin.
Who can disagree with George? George Baldwin speaks for us. Today we are all George Baldwins. Or something.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday?
Yes, it is. Wednesday.
You're sure?
Oh, I'm sure.
There's no possibility at all that it's Friday.
No. Sorry, no.
Okay, but it's also not possible that it's Monday, right?
No.
We know that it's at the very least it's Tuesday and probably Wednesday.
And it's not Thursday, the squirreliest day of the week.
Okay. But I mean,
We're halfway through, right?
I mean,
we are at a midway point.
We are.
Okay, just check it.
Are you having a tough life?
Doesn't it seem like the last few... Yes, my life is really... I have to sit here, and then I have to talk, and then occasionally I have to get up, and I have to go whiz, and then I have to come back, and I have to drink more beverages so I can whiz again later, because that's the only thing that interrupts all the talking that I have to do.
You might have stresses outside of the workplace I don't know about. I mean, I do.
Much of that talking is about boobs. It's a hell on earth, Don. No, it just seems like it has nothing to do with it being bad. It's just that Christy Trinquist is actually the one who started this by noting that time seemed to be going kind of slowly the last couple of weeks. And I would agree with that. I would concur. I'm not even saying it's going badly. I'm just saying it seems like there's some sort of a relativistic time shift that seems to have happened over the last week or so, where every day takes about 5 or 6 days to get through. It is Wednesday, May 25th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. It is Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, the home of quality. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, we'll be talking to newly minted Nieman Fellow at Harvard, Anna Griffin, columnist from The Oregonian. She'll be joining us for what I would imagine is almost certainly the last time. I don't even think she's coming in. I think she's just phoning. It's probably from the airport as she prepares to decamp for brighter and more polished shores, as I would certainly do. Next hour, we have your Democracy in the March coming up. Also, we will talk. Was something on last night that I was supposed to watch?
I don't think so.
Okay, because I'm all askew now because House is gone, Justified is gone. I mean, they're in the off season anyway. So there's nothing I was supposed to have watched last night.
No, I kept having that feeling too, and there wasn't anything.
Excellent. So we got, but we'll talk to Anna Griffin next hour at RickEmersonShow.com or around 2 o'clock, and then we've got Democracy in the March coming up as well. You can join us at RickEmersonShow.com for the level cost of just 32 cents a day. This is Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
Detectives were investigating what they called a possible bias attack against two gay men on the East Bank Esplanade. Lieutenant Robert King said that 23-year-old Brad Forkner and 25-year-old Christopher Rosevear were attacked by several suspects around 8:30 p.m. Sunday night. Forkner and Rosevear told investigators they'd been holding hands in Waterfront Park and walked from the Burnside Bridge to the Hawthorne Bridge while several men followed them, talking, laughing, and pointing. The two said they were not sure it was directed at them. Forkner then said he was pushed and punched by several men before he was able to break away to call 911. Police Chief Mike Reese said, "I'm concerned by any assault of this nature, particularly when it appears the victims were targeted because of their perceived sexual orientation." The suspects hit Rosevear in the head, face, back, and ribs before running away south on a trail past the two victims. Stephen Casella, the Q Center, said that the fact that people are still wanting to attack people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity is beyond my comprehension.
And so what time did this happen? When?
This was 8:30 p.m. on Sunday night. And apparently there were also other people there on the Esplanade.
Because it still would have been light outside. It wouldn't even have been dark at that time.
And there were a few people around, and apparently no one did anything. No one called 911. No one yelled at them, "Hey, knock that off," or anything. I mean, great, you see somebody beating up somebody, you don't want to run over and get in the middle of it.
None of your concern, Don.
But, you might want to grab your phone and call the man.
That's the thing. If it's even 10, 15, 20 years ago, you go over to, one likes to think that one would go, "Well, if I saw that happening, I'd go and get involved." And you say that to yourself, but then you also realize that you're probably a pussy, because most of us are. And it's like, you don't want to go over there and just come back with a bag full of your own teeth. But now everybody, what with the cellular technology, it seems like you could probably just pick up the phone and call the guys who come and stop that. The interesting thing about this is that it was while it was still daylight out, and then also... And a lot of times, crimes like this often happen in the vicinity of or outside gay bars, which has nothing to do with them being gay bars, has to do with them being bars. Because a lot of fights and a lot of dust-ups, regardless of who started it, whether it's justified, whether it's unjustified, happen where people have been boozing it up. If you get a bunch of people who are drinking, walking by a bunch of other people who have been drinking, somebody says something or thinks that somebody looks at them or thinks that somebody, is hassling them and giving them, what for. And then the next thing you know, it's just a whole bunch of whatever. Which is all of which is exacerbated and magnified by alcohol. It doesn't justify it or excuse it or explain it, but at least it indicates why those things tend to happen. The closer you get to any place that is just getting people drunk, the greater the likelihood that somebody is going to end up going home with something blackened. But the idea that they were, by all accounts, just doing the classic minding their own business.
Yes.
Walking along. And also, this is, 2011? And I would think that we would have evolved, at least in Portland. One likes to think that we are no longer just a city of knuckle-draggers, but that's apparently not the case.
Apparently that is not true.
Not everybody has gotten the memo, so, you know, so there's that. All right. Although, I guess to be fair, we don't necessarily know... We don't know the spark of the whole thing yet, so, you know, it's... Because they haven't gotten the guys, right? The guys are still sort of... Whoever it is sort of... They're laminate. They're out there somewhere, skulking around. So, you know, who's to say?
Just lurking about insecure in their own sexuality.
So it seems. I mean, look, let's be honest. It's not like there aren't people who get their asses beaten in the world, you know, who deserve it. Clearly there are.
That happens.
It's probably doesn't seem like that's the case here.
No.
You know, but you know, I guess they'll be found at some point because provoked or not, if you decide to settle things by just beating on some guys under a bridge, you're not that bright. And so, you know, the long arm of the law doesn't have to be that long to catch you eventually because you're just going to end up doing something. You're going to end up huffing Krylon paint and then going to try to rob a liquor store with like a broom. And then they're going to come and find you and they're going to put you in a cell. They're going to beat you until you tell them what they want to know. And then we'll find out the answer to all of this. So it'll work itself out one way or the other pretty soon, I would imagine.
Well, fire crews were called to the Kings Island Amusement Park on Tuesday night. There were several phone calls and photos sent into news organizations about a large plume of smoke coming from the park. One of the animatronic dinosaurs at the park's new Dinosaurs Alive exhibit caught fire.
What park is this?
This is the Kings Island Amusement Park, which is not here. And I thought I had written down exactly
I can tell it's not
it
here because it's a place that
it's
I was...
It's in Ohio. It's in Mason, Ohio.
It's a place I never got to go when I was a child, so of course it had to be somewhere else.
Yes. They have a more than 80 world-class rides and attractions that are perfect for thrill-seekers of all ages.
Okay.
Anyway, one of the animatronic dinosaurs at the park's new Dinosaurs Alive exhibit caught fire around 8:40 p.m.
Dinosaurs ablaze.
Spokesman Don Helbig said this morning the dinosaur that burned was the Ruang Yellow River Dinosaur, the main attraction of the exhibit. Helbig said the dinosaur's remains had already been removed. Helbig said there were no guests in the park at the time of the fire because the park closes at 8 p.m. during the week when the kids are out of until kids are out of school. The exhibit has not yet opened to the public, and the attraction will apparently still open on Thursday as scheduled.
Well, but let's be honest. I mean, if you were like a 10-year-old boy or whatever, and you're just taking the tram or through that or, you know, however it is, there's no way that that would have diminished the appeal of the dinosaur. It would have, in fact, done everything to augment the appeal.
Oh, my God, the dinosaur's on fire.
Seriously, it would have been a dinosaur that's kind of going and, you know, and just stomping around and, I don't know, eating goats or whatever it is it does. You know, it's terrifying an animatronic Jeff Goldblum, but then also covered in flames. I mean, that's the only way you could make dinosaurs better is to have them breathe fire. Because then, you know, dragons.
Yeah, I'm looking on the Kings Island website, and the attraction's due to open the 26th. They're calling it the world's largest animatronic dinosaur park.
Awesome.
It has 56 animatronic models in an outdoor Jurassic Forest setting, and 60 of them move, and they replicate all of the things that apparently dinosaurs do.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
There should occasionally be an animatronic Sam Jackson that just appears and says dialogue really woodenly. Am I thinking of the right... Is that Jurassic Park? Sam Jackson?
No. I don't think Sam Jackson was in Jurassic Park.
Are you kidding me?
Was he?
Wasn't he one of the engineers? Wasn't he one of the computer guys?
Oh, I guess maybe he was.
And then he goes down to check the... Let me go in the dark basement where there's no light.
Oh, that's right.
Let me go check the fuse box. What could possibly happen? And then it's... And then I think it's a whole thing where his arms get removed. Not of his own choosing.
I just always tend to think of the lawyer getting his, Newman, and then... And then Jeff Goldblum.
No, you're confusing two different people. Newman is not the lawyer. Newman is Dyson. He's the guy that is actually stealing the embryos.
Oh, yeah.
And putting them in, little shaving cream cans.
I haven't seen Jurassic Park in a long
time. It holds up. Here's the thing. I watched it, like, maybe a year ago. And here's the thing is that, you know, Laura still hasn't seen it. She's a bad American, and she was raised by wolves. But not even really, like... She was raised by lazy wolves. Wolves who just ate a lot of starch and lard and just kind of worked the clicker. And so she never seen Jurassic Park. And that's one of those things, like, that I have not gotten around to. I mean, when she was just a savage when I met her. I mean, she'd never seen Jaws, The Exorcist, Network.
You had your work cut out for you, is what you're saying.
Yeah, seriously. I still do. I mean, it's just, you know, it was just nothing but day and night just making lists and lecturing. Anyway, so...
Hard to imagine.
Yeah. Well, I was taking my work home with me. But, so she doesn't see Jurassic Park, but I watched it about a year ago, just I think I was like, I had like Time to Kill on a Saturday, and I wanted to see if it actually held up before I had her watch it, and it still does. It's still really, really good. The things that don't work about it now didn't work about it then, but those are few and far between. It's actually, I give it like a solid 85%. I mean, it functions very, very well. I mean, it's not Jaws, but like nothing is. It's still a very, very good film. It is not nearly as clanky and dated as I was afraid it would be. So I strongly, but none of the dinosaurs are on fire. That's the thing.
No, that's, they should be.
Seriously, that is the only way the dinosaurs could become better. That or if they had like metallic wings.
Honestly, this park should try and figure out a way to like incorporate that into the ride.
It should just happen again every now, like every, yeah. Like one every 12 times, because that's the repeat value then. You know, like every 10th visit, something just explodes and then and then rises out of itself like a metallic clanking phoenix or something. And so I knew it wasn't. The only thing we have here is we have that goddamn enchanted forest thing on the way to Seattle, which I was never allowed to go to either. So,
which is like if a crazy man decided to build Disneyland with $500.
Well, I wouldn't know, Don.
Oh, you've never been?
No, I was never allowed to go there. That
well,
was another.
You could go later as an adult.
Yeah, because that wouldn't be sad and pathetic. That wouldn't have to be followed by my suicide. Whatever.
I went as an adult. I mean, I wasn't from here.
Because that's not sad and pathetic.
I was on a road trip with my mother, and I was punishing her for all of my childhood. How we were never allowed to like stop on a road trip and go to any roadside attractions. We always had to get to our destination as quickly as possible. So when I went on a road trip with my mother as an adult, I made her go to every single damn petting zoo and dinosaur park and thing with a buffalo between here and California.
Well, as long as it was coming from a place of fun.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Uh-huh.
For me, I mean.
Yeah, no, that's a thing that would almost certainly not impress. I mean, it wouldn't have impressed me then, but now it would just be like, it would just be, I think, sad on many levels.
The best thing about, the best thing about Enchanted Forest is its cheesiness, that as you walk through the park, there are these little houses, and they're sort of little fairy tale houses that are supposed to represent different stories, like, you know, Red Riding Hood and Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. And the little houses were built with a certain amount of care, but then they were filled with things that they were apparently just bought at secondhand stores.
Like a Woolworths?
Yeah, so like
Like a touch lamp?
Yeah, so you look in like the Snow White house or something, and there's Snow White, and there's like a bird on her shoulder that's like half the size of her body, and there's bunnies sitting around, but the bunnies are like those flocked banks that you get at the 99-cent store.
Awesome.
Yeah, that makes it worth the trip entirely, because it's just dioramas made out of junk and spare parts.
So it's like Disneyland if that Church of Elvis chick had made it.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah. Except there isn't like a crazy, dirty-haired woman screaming at you to give her money.
And there's also a Dancing Waters show, which is in the area where there are tables that you can eat food that you get from the snack bar. So it's this horrible, dank room that smells like popcorn.
What are the dancing? Is it just a guy with a hose?
No, it's just, you know, it's a fountain, and there's some cheesy colored lights on them, and they're, you know, they're automated. So like, oh, the left one's shooting up and the right one's shooting up, and then all three are shooting up, and oh, it turned green. And then people are sitting there eating hot dogs.
If you squint, it's like being at the Bellagio.
That's exactly. It's Oregon's version of the Bellagio.
Excellent. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour at the Rick Emerson Radio Program, we have a Democracy on the March. Also, we'll talk to Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Coming up this hour, we have your entertainment news, also Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
A group of Oregon legislators told federal officials Tuesday that the Hanford Nuclear Reservation should not be considered a permanent storage of radioactive waste. The 17 lawmakers said in a letter to the U.S. Department of Energy that Hanford is already highly contaminated with radioactive waste. The existing situation is perilous enough without adding more waste, wrote the lawmakers.
You think?
All of them Democrats representing the Portland area. The lawmakers said they're concerned about the potential for severe contamination in the Portland area if radioactive material were released on interstate highways while being transported to Hanford.
Let me understand this. So they don't actually have a problem with the nuclear waste being stored in my hometown?
No.
They just don't want it passing through here on the way to my hometown?
Right.
Okay. All right. But if it can just magically be transported there to where, you know, like I grew up and, you know, drank milk from radioactive cows who ate radioactive grass out of the radioactive ground, that's fine. If it's just, if elves can take it there for us.
I believe what the Oregon legislators are saying is that Portland, important. Kennewick, not so much.
I can't really disagree with that, although one has to ask oneself exactly how much more important Kennewick could be if it wasn't, you know, radioactive.
Well, there is
It might be trending upward if it didn't kill everyone who lived there. you know, but I'm just saying.
So Representative Jules Bailey, a Portland Democrat who signed the letter, said the opposition isn't just about telling the federal government to put radioactive waste in someone else's backyard. He said, not everybody has the most contaminated nuclear site in the Western Hemisphere in their backyard.
No, that's a distinction that we claim all for ourselves in Kennewick.
When we're already spending billions and billions of dollars a year to clean this up, I can't imagine why we would put more into it.
Well, I think you can make the argument that the ship has sort of sailed. I mean, they're basically, you know, they just store, and I'm not making this up, literally at one point, they just found, like, that they had run out of, like, barrels or whatever to put the plutonium. Because they were just putting the plutonium in these barrels, like the kind that hobos heat their hands over during the winter, and, like, pounding the top onto it with a hammer and then sticking it in the ground. And then they ran out of barrels, and somebody said, I thought you were supposed to buy the barrels. And nobody had any barrels. So then they just went to the store, like, you know, like the Fred Meyer down the way, and they just bought some metallic buckets, like you used to go slop the hogs. And then they just filled them full of, like, I don't know, liquid death, whatever came out of the thing that they were supposed to be burying in. And then everybody thought somebody else was going to do something with it, and nobody did anything with it. And so then they found it, like, a year later, and it was just sitting there. Just a bunch of buckets of radioactive waste, just, you know, just sort of evaporating away into the warm summer air.
I can't see why there would be such a problem with, you know, cancer and nine-eyed carp in the general area.
My parents could never quite grasp why I was so I was planning on moving, whether I had a job or not, it didn't matter. If I just had to go hustle in downtown Tacoma, which really would have been a hard row to hoe in, like, many ways, that there was no way I was going to be staying in that town. I mean, God only knows.
Hey, you're pretty for Tacoma.
Well, thank you, Don. It's nice of you to say. Even if you don't mean it, it's nice. I mean, I can't even imagine how much my lifespan is shortened, like, already, much less if I had just stayed there. Living in Kennewick is just like being in a taxi cab, except, like, the meter is just running backward, you know? And it's like the longer you're there, you're just 30 years, 20, 10, well, okay.
Yeah, but don't you have that guy who turned into soap?
I'm sorry?
Or am I mixing up the Kennewick man with somebody else?
He turned into soap?
Okay, I'm thinking of the body.
Are you confusing this with a commercial starring the Scrubbing Bubbles?
No, I think I'm confusing the Kennewick man with the body at the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia, where they have a body that was buried in volcanic ash for like a century or something.
Yeah,
and when they
found
it, it had soapified. The whole body had just done whatever that thing is where everything had transmogrified into soap.
No, people in Kennewick just die and then they turn into things that are put in lead-lined boxes and carried away by guys in, like, hazmat suits. That's it. So, or you're an Indian and you end up in my grandfather's basement.
Yeah, although when I die, I really wouldn't mind being liquefied and just put in a metal bucket.
No,
and
I mean,
sat in the corner somewhere.
Sort of like Zan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They could just write Dawn on the side with a Sharpie, just so everyone knows not to kick it over.
Note to self.
A 16-year-old girl in Thousand Oaks, California, is in serious condition after she fell from the back of a pickup truck while egging a home with friends. The girl was vandalizing a home around 1:30 a.m. Monday.
That's excellent.
With five friends between the ages of 16 and 17 when the accident happened. The girl was standing on the bed of a Ford pickup truck as the group doused the home with paintballs and eggs when someone yelled for the driver to take off. She then lost her footing and fell off the truck. A teen in another getaway car did not see her and drove over her, dragging her under the vehicle for 100 feet.
Suck that, hillbilly.
A lot of road rash, a lot of road burn on her legs. She was in a lot of pain, and a lot of the kids were just panicking, one neighbor said.
Where did this happen?
This is Thousand Oaks, California, which is a mixed suburb in California. It's one of the suburbs where there are some very well-off people in Thousand Oaks, but there's also some, like, not-so-well-off parts of Thousand Oaks.
Let's be honest.
It's hard to tell.
It's probably not the first rash this girl had.
Ooh. The teens are classmates at Thousand Oaks High School. Police said they were vandalizing the home after theirs was crashed earlier in the day. The girl's identity was not released. She suffered serious injuries and was taken to Los Robles Hospital for treatment.
That's great. That's wonderful. See, that's the thing that puts a little smile on your face, you know, where the universe just works out in our favor for once. The balance sheet is righted, if only momentarily. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Later on today, you can get this program via MP3 right here at legionofnews.com or Cascadia.fm or via iTunes. You can also take it with you on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do some entertainment news, shall we?
You're mixing it up.
Let's do some science news, shall we?
We're not mixing it up. What's happening right now?
Let's do some science news.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I meant science. I'm holding science. I just said entertainment.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric or facebook.com, as Don Taylor would say. You can also find them at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. And if you go there right now, so let me just sort of a quick recap, because I think we talked about this yesterday. If you go there right now, you will see. So on the one hand, we got the snake that was wrapped around the power coils in the guys outside the guy's house. I think we then also have the power box that was outside of Lars Larson's studio in his old building before he had to move. Then we had the creepy melted doll head that they found at a fire where part of the house was destroyed because of faulty wiring inside. And then I think there was a thing about giant spiders. Wait, hold on.
They must across a lot of pretty nasty spiders, though, when, because they're the kind of guys that have to crawl around in crawl spaces and under houses and in attics and stuff.
The other photograph is a guy was running, not that anyone in the audience would know what this is, a guy was running an illegal grow room along with some 100-amp electrical services that I think he had sort of jiggered around himself to make work, but not really. And everything was just sort of put together with, like, coat hangers. And that all went badly. So they had to come in and fix everything there. So, oh, and then there's the thing where the tree hit the power line and knocked it into the house where it touched some metal, and then just everything just sort of went and started to cinder, to smolder and singe and burn. So you can find all this at facebook.com/SquiresElectric. It's a panoply of destructive images that are wonderful. So you can find out more about them by calling 503-252-1609 or going to squiresElectric.com. Now, maybe your house isn't, like, on fire as we speak. Maybe you're not running some sort of felonious drug operation. I mean, not that we know of. If you find that you don't want to have to deal with the electrical system in your own house or your business or your home office, you want to have somebody who really does that for a living and who is a licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installer, contractor, and supervisor handle that. That is Squires Electric, proud sponsors of Science on the March here at Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
A new species of bat with a distinctive nose and impressive teeth has been documented. The bat, called Micronycteris garifuna, hails from St. Vincent Island in the Caribbean and is described in the journal Mammalian Biology. The bat's name honors the Garifuna people who live on the island. Their culture is a mix of Carib, Arawak, and West African ancestry. You, Rick Emerson, can see a picture of this bat, by the way. I have put the picture in the newly reinstalled and working Dropbox.
Oh, excellent. I'll get that uploaded to the website.
You should look at it very soon, though, because it's creepy and disturbing.
Wait, is it just called...
Pointy-nosed bat. When Peter Larson... I told you.
The hell is... No, that shouldn't exist.
Peter Larson, a postdoctoral research associate at the Department of Biological Sciences at Texas Tech, and his colleague Lizette Stiles became aware of the bat, and they thought that it was already on the science record books. The bat was caught during an expedition to the island in 2005-2006. So they thought it was a species that had been described already in South America. A year or so went by. They looked at the species they collected and compared it and realized, no, this is a completely different bat.
It's like one-third bat, one-third, like, housefly, one-third, like, rhinoceros or something. This shouldn't be. This shouldn't exist.
Yeah, it's... They think that the bat evolved from ancestors that marooned on the Caribbean island during the Pleistocene era, when the dramatic receding of glaciers and rising sea levels occurred. This bat roosts in caves, trees, and even logs on the forest floor. They believe the pointy appendage on the on the nose may be used to facilitate echolocation.
By the way, it also roosts in your dreams at night and in the birdhouse in your soul, in which it has killed all the other occupants. What is today, the 25th? So you'll be able to find this at the rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for May 25th. I was going to say it's the thing called pointy nose bat, but it'll announce itself. You won't really need to. It's not a thing you're really going to have to look for.
You're not going to confuse it with something else.
No,
really.
No. You just go to rickemerson.com slash pictures, and you go to visual aids for May 25th, 2011, and you'll find the picture of the pointy nose bat, which is terrifying. All right.
Raucous parrots have been accused of being drunk and disorderly by residents living in Palmerston, Australia. The birds are thought to get into their inebriated state by eating a particular plant that makes them exhibit all the tendencies of having overdone it on alcohol. According to ARC Animal Hospital vet Dr. Stephen Cutter, the birds act in a drunken manner and then fall over. It's probably a plant with alcohol or toxins in a plant making it worse, he said. The birds typically start out making a lot of racket on a Friday night at the Palmerston markets, followed by more loud, drunken behavior before they eventually fall out of the trees. The morning after is said to be very bad for these seriously hungover parrots, who can be sick for up to 3 days. Dr. Cutter asked that the bird's drunken behavior has said that the bird's drunken behavior has made them very unpopular with the locals.
I can imagine.
It's not the first time this phenomenon has occurred, with the birds noted for engaging in their drunken antics every year around early May.
Where was this at the sixth place?
Australia.
Okay, well, I mean, that's... Yeah. How surprising can that behavior be in, like, anything there?
Another seasonal scientific anomaly would be the dead bodies that ride to the surface of New York's harbor and rivers as the warm weather of spring approaches.
It's just like the swallows coming back to Capistrano, Don.
The Wall Street Journal reported on Tuesday that more of these so-called floaters are recovered from the city's waterways in April, May, and June than in the rest of the year. This according to Captain Anthony J. Russo of the New York Police Department's Harbor Unit. Of the 25 bodies pulled from local waters in 2009, Russo said 10 were recovered during the spring months. Last year, when 26 floaters were recovered, half of the total surfaced in the spring. This year, through the end of April, there have been 9 bodies gathered from the harbor by city officials. Icy waters slow the decomposition process during the winter, which helps conceal submerged bodies. Warmer spring weather raises water temperatures, speeds decomposition, and causes the release of gases. The buildup of gases makes the body more buoyant, and it floats to the surface.
Why is it like the animal kingdom gets monarch butterflies that, you know... That you can just do that. Matthew McConaughey can do long monologues about in a movie while talking to, you know, Kate Hudson and, you know, and describing, you know, the toils and tribulations and, you know, and trials of, you know, and then we just get a thing where when springtime comes, just dead mobsters float to the surface of the Hudson.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy, to, I'm not sure who this is. Oh, a guy from the New Jersey State Major Police Crime Unit said foul play is common in floater cases. Quote,
you think?
You're not going to get that many people floating in the East River or the Hudson from a fall off a pier.
No, not even there. Hey, doesn't it seem like it ought to be... That ought to be a scene in a film, though. There ought to be... There really... Okay, I think I have asked you this before, and I don't think we were able to ever able to come up with the answer. Maybe I asked somebody else. What is... I was just going to mention something that ought to be a scene in a film, but it triggered a something in my head that I don't think I ever got the answer to before, so maybe it wasn't you that I asked. What film was it... That, and it was a recent film where there was a sequence in which a kid was sort of down by the river, like whizzing or washing his hands or something, and then all of a sudden just a whole, like, sea of corpses sort of swept by in the river.
That I don't know.
Does it sound like a thing you've seen? I couldn't have just hallucinated or dreamt it. I swear to God, it was a film that came out recently where there's, like, a kid, like a 10 or 12-year-old, and he's down by the river, like, washing his hands or trying to catch a fish or something. And then there's, like, sort of, like the current kind of picks up and becomes swifter. And then there's just, like, hundreds of bodies that suddenly flow by in the river.
That's not ringing a bell with me, but that's not to say that it didn't
Maybe this
happen.
Is like how Paul McCartney just dreamt the song yesterday. Maybe I just came up... Because I was thinking that there really ought to be a sequence like this in some sort of horrific End of Days film where... You know, through no supernatural activity, but through some sort of seismic shift, like all of the bodies over the last 170 years that have been thrown in the Hudson River with, like, cement shoes, all just, like, rise to the surface at once. That'd be creepy. That would weird you out if you were there and you saw that happening.
Well, my favorite part of the story, before I put it aside, is the statement by the New Jersey police crime guy, who says that when the floater is reported, the aquatic officers head to the scene. First, they determine if the remains are human. Then they haul the body into the dock of their boat using ropes, poles, and a gurney, about which he says, you want to be careful bringing them out of the water because you don't want parts to dislodge and you don't want to lose any forensic evidence.
No, I'd imagine you don't. No, because then it's like, then you just got to get one of those nets like you use to clean out of your, you know, fish tank. You know, and you just got to be, like, skimming the surface back and forth.
Jim, get that. There's an elbow. Go. Yeah. A farmer in China's Fujian province has opted for an unusual piece of eyewear for his chickens. The farmer uses glasses to stop them from fighting with other chickens.
It's unusual eyewear for his chickens. The fact that he's getting spectacles for the chickens, it doesn't itself count as being distinct.
No, in China they wear them, you know, for reading. But these are for a different purpose entirely.
Okay.
Zhang Zhaolong, the farmer, modeled the aggressive rooster's glasses, or blinkers, after his own. He said, that they seem to work by preventing the chickens from looking straight ahead, therefore making sure they can't make eye contact with other chickens. The spectacles make them look sideways, which in the farmer's opinion causes them to behave more cautiously. He said, it's worked really well. They can't attack each other, so confrontations are minimized.
Okay.
And finally, vuvuzelas spew infectious disease particles, according to a new study. A slobbery...
And common sense, by the way.
A slobbery blast from a sports fan with a vuvuzela could increase your chances of getting sick. Ruth McNerney, a researcher from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, noted the blaring use of the vuvuzela at the 2010 World Cup and wondered how the horn might fuel the spread of infectious disease. The popularity of the horn actually coincided with the peak of the June-July flu season in South Africa. With no epidemiological data in hand, McNerney decided to characterize how the instrument sprays respiratory aerosols, a factor previously linked to the spread of infectious disease. Given the horn's shape and the trumpeting action people use to make the sound, she figured the vuvuzela might release more aerosol particles compared to the usual shouting and screaming at sporting events. And so they did a study, got volunteers, they blew into the vuvuzelas, they also shouted into paper cones. Using a laser counter and a wind speed detector, they analyzed the output and found that in each case, 97% of the particles collected were between 0.5 and 5 microns. But the vuvuzela sent out roughly 4 million aerosol particles every second, while somebody shouting sprayed only 7,000 per second.
Well, yeah, because you're just because you're channeling everything, and then and the fact that it's a trumpet, I would imagine, increases the velocity of it because it's compressed. It's like a water pick.
Yeah.
But it's like a water pick of germs and death and filth.
Yes.
And by the way, which we have here in the studio. So that's great. And that explains a whole lot, actually. And especially if you get like 10,000 of those guys all in a stadium. I mean, you think being at an airport, you're breathing recycled air. I mean, you're just inhaling a guy's like spit cloud.
Yeah,
I mean,
and not really. Just a guy's spit cloud. Hundreds of guys spit clouds.
Seriously, you don't want that. No, that's a bad thing. All right. Is that the end of your science
there?
Back when you were doing the thing in China with I was trying to do a whole, like, in Soviet Russia, glasses wear you sort of a thing, but I couldn't. I couldn't make it work. Here's the thing. That's a sort of meme that actually I can never do. Like, I'm never able to come up with the whole, like, in Soviet Russia, you. I'm never able to do that.
I just keep having that, a little snippet of the Bare Naked Ladies in my head where I keep thinking, Chinese chicken? Yeah, that one song.
Please don't do that.
So.
Don't.
Because I just.
Don't
how often do you actually use the phrase Chinese chicken?
I'm speaking now on behalf of everyone. Please.
I didn't say the chinkity
please
chink
don't.
Part.
You have to quit. You have to quit right now. I'm just speaking as a member of just the human race now, as a member of society, for the love of God. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, it's the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused and entertained for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. And that's like the peak. That's if you're paying like monthly. If you pay, yearly, it's like 29 cents or something, which I think we figured out yesterday works out to literally it's like 8 cents an hour, you know, 9 wow. cents an hour or something like that. I mean, here's the thing.
It's like Philippine factory worker wages.
Yes, it's exactly like that. I mean, if you can't come up with 9 cents an hour, first of all, if you can't come up with 9 cents an hour, you're not even listening to this, because I would be morally appalled by the fact that you owned a computer. If you were not able to come up with 9 cents, first of all, if you can't come up with 9 cents an hour and you're listening to this, whatever you're listening to this on, you stole from somebody. So
Well, now to be fair, they might have spent all of their money on the computer, and now they don't have the 9 cents.
So maybe they spend all of their cash just to have a device by which they could listen
right.
to the show, and then after that they were bereft of additional funds.
And then they could not subscribe to the show. It's like an O. Henry story, really.
That's exactly what it's a Greek punishment almost. Well, in any event, blah, 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 blah. So that's next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got Ms. Anna Griffin is going to be joining us, and we'll also have Democracy on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
President Barack Obama addressed a joint session of the British Parliament in London today. Obama explains the military involvement in Libya and the extent of it.
When a leader is threatening to massacre his people, and the international community is calling for action, that's why we stopped a massacre in Libya. And we will not relent until the people of Libya are protected and the shadow of tyranny is lifted.
Plus, it's a good distraction that keeps us from going into the Congo and fixing everything there, because that would be hard.
Yeah. Obama said both countries are committed to stopping the spread of nuclear weapons.
From North Korea to Iran, we've sent a message that those who flaunt their obligations will face consequences, which is why America and the European Union just recently strengthened our sanctions on Iran.
But not on the Congo.
Obama explains who the war on terrorism is focused on and who it's not.
Our nations are not and will never be at war with Islam. Our fight is focused on defeating Al-Qaeda and its extremist allies.
Is there a guy? I wonder if there's like some zany Arab morning show hosted by a guy named Al-Qaeda. I'm Al-Qaeda, coming up this hour. And, you know, and then there's a guy in the background, like, wouldn't be a horn. It would be some sort of, like, a Middle Eastern music instrument, like one of those thing they used to summon people to prayer. And they would play that whenever there was a zany joke.
I don't think there is. I bet there isn't.
Like, he would, you know, they would just be...
Even they might find that to be in bad taste.
I should just sell this joke to the Imus show, this sketch, where it was just like, you know, a guy, hello, you are listening to Al-Qaeda. And then there's, like, a sitar.
And then he would take it.
And then I make a joke about, you know, and then I make a camel joke that's a play on the word hump. Mm-hmm. And then in the background, a guy goes, you know, instead of a guy saying, that sure is funny, I'm man, a guy goes, A-da-da-da! And then they go, and then they play the horn, and they goes, wah! And then they go, and then they take a break.
You could put that together in 10 minutes. And
seriously.
Just send him the check and he's
just
like it.
Do that right now and just sell that. The problem is there's nobody left to... I was going to say I'd sell it to Nelson and Terry, but that's not possible anymore.
Opie and Anthony are still in business, aren't they?
Yeah, but they got... they got Jim Norton making monkey paw jokes, though, yeah. So they don't need me. There's really no one to... There's no morning shows to whom I can sell my wit. Anyway, what are you going to do? All right, here's Don Taylor.
A new study puts Portland among the safest communities in the nation for pedestrians. The report was released by Transportation for America and shows Portland ranking as the 7th least dangerous metro area out of 54 cities around the country. Though Portland is safer when compared to other areas, more than 250 pedestrians were killed from 2000 to 2009. Personally, I believe that the reason it's so safe here for pedestrians is because we coddle them. Because whenever you're driving, particularly downtown, the Pearl, wherever, people just cross against the light in the middle of the street. They step off the curb in front of count. And we all just, like, stop, and we don't hit them. We don't honk at them. We don't swear at them. We just go, oh, downtown, people are just going to cross against the light. It's like in certain parts of this town, we just accept it.
Well, and homeless people are the worst. I mean, they just... Homeless people.
Old Town. The ones in Old Town are aggressive about it.
And they just sort of stare at you. They just give you, like, they give you the stink eye. They, like defying you to hit them.
Yeah, this is my neighborhood. I will walk in the street when I please.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, angrily assertive about it. But I mean, even other parts of, like, the downtown area.
Oh, yeah.
All
no,
of
in
a,
any
all
other
of a sudden,
city,
people
they would
just
be.
Don't pay attention to, don't care about the traffic lights because they know they can get away with it.
Well, that's because, and so there's, like, there's New York, which is where, you know, New York is a place where just pedestrians run the town. I mean, in New York, I mean, it's like, I don't even know why they have lights there. I mean, it's like the, and I always thought that this was like an exaggeration because it's the opposite of L.A. Like in L.A., you know, that is a city that is all about cars. You don't walk in L.A. And if you do walk, I mean, it's like you are taking, I mean, your safety is up to you because no one's going to stop for you. And then in New York, which I always thought was an exaggeration until I went there, it's like they have the thing that's like the red hand and then the walking guy, then, you know, telling you at the intersection, telling you when, but nobody ever pays any attention to it. I mean, people just streaming across the streets, going diagonally from one corner to another 24 hours a day at all times. And if you're a car, you just basically have to wait and slowly thread your way through. Whereas we're sort of in the middle where, depending on where you are in Portland, you know, sometimes you have to wait for the cars, but sometimes, yeah, if you're like downtown or in Old Town, yeah, you just walk like a dick right out of the middle of traffic, just assuming that like Dawn or I will stop for you. And one of these days, that's not going to happen. You're going to end up like
exactly.
A foot into my grill. So, and that's going to be a bad day for you, friend.
An Oregon representative proposed the state meet certain recycling goals instead of banning plastic grocery bags. Republican Representative Vic Gilliam of Silverton suggested the amendment to a bill that would outlaw the bags. The amendment would avoid a ban if by next year 20% of all plastic bags sold in Oregon are recycled.
Recycling bowls? Did you say recycled bowls somewhere in the beginning?
Recycling goals.
Goals. Okay.
Yes, if we... basically, he's saying that instead of banning plastic bags entirely, why don't we try to get people to actually recycle more? And if 20% of all plastic bags sold are recycled, then don't ban them. The recycling goals would increase by 20% every year through to 2015. The amendment would also require manufacturers to report the number of plastic checkout bags sold to Oregon retailers.
Here's the thing, and I hate to sound a libertarian about this, because libertarians are largely, you know, jerks. So I hate to just be sound like one of those guys. But it's like, why are the plastic bag people getting the brunt of this? Everything around you is made of plastic. I mean, and everything, and you know, and it's not like plastic bags are any more disposable than anything else. Everything we own in this country is now disposable. We were talking the other day about electronics. Maybe, you know, people will take their crap to ThinkGeek or whatever when they're done, but most of the time, if you got a DVD player that stops working, maybe you give it to Goodwill, but I'm betting like 9 in 10 that goes in the garage and then eventually just goes in the trash because there's no resale value. Everything around you is made of plastic. I don't understand why we are just singling out the plastic bag folks as like the boogeymen here.
Well, the EPA has estimated that something like somewhere between 500 billion and a trillion plastic bags are like, you know, make their way into society like every year. And a lot of them end up in the waterways and they choke fish, they plug up pipes, they themselves are a particular menace. And there's something that control.
So they just need to so this isn't about plastic bags being bad. People just need to learn to use trash cans.
Yeah, and
so if we just stuck them in trash cans, this would accomplish the same thing.
And people need to start learning to use reusable grocery bags that you take with you to the store. I mean,
I can get the whole thing of like, you shouldn't like stick them, you shouldn't jam them down a duck's larynx. I mean, I can get that, you know, like if you know you want to be clogging up, sewers and waterways and whatever with them. I can totally see that because then that just mucks up the works for everybody. But then it's like the leap to, and people should be using like reusable bags. Well, why?
Because then we won't be using as many of those plastic bags and they won't end up in the
if people just like would stick stuff in trash cans, like there's nothing wrong with plastic is my point.
No, but
it's all positioned like there's something inherently wrong with using plastic goods.
Well,
and there isn't.
But in the case of the plastic bags in particular,
there's nothing wrong with using motor oil. But it's wrong if you dump it into a dolphin sanctuary.
And we have had issues where we have had to educate people on how to deal with motor oil.
Making it illegal.
But they might have if there was like, you know, people were dumping like 1 trillion quarts of motor oil into the water every year. The thing is, it is something...
We are dumping 1 trillion quarts of oil into the water every year. What planet do you live on?
You're not taking a quart of motor oil and just dumping it down your sewer.
Why don't you go ask the people in Louisiana how much oil is being dumped into the water or not? Why don't you ask the people in Alaska how much oil is being dumped in the water or not? And then come back and tell me we don't dump oil in the water on this planet. I don't care. I'm just saying, for you to say that we don't dump a lot of oil in the water is ridiculous.
Individuals do not dump. We have been taught not to dump toxic paints and oils and things down our sewer systems and down our drains because they go into the waterways. We have learned not to do that. 30, 40 years ago, we did not necessarily know not to do that. And there's been public education to not do that. So it's the same way with the plastic bags. Trillions of these bags are manufactured every year so that you can bring your stuff home from Fred Meyer and you can use it to pick up your dog poop and what have you. And it's like, we don't need that many of them. We can learn to not use
that,
them.
But see, that is my point exactly. So why don't we just take the same solution we just took to the other stuff that you were mentioning, as opposed to making them illegal, which we did not do to other things. We could just teach people to not just be, like, dumping it into the river.
Well, I think essentially that's what the Republicans are kind of trying to do, although the reasoning they're behind them doing it is probably because they're getting kickbacks from the plastic bag manufacturers, because the plastic groups that make this stuff are really concerned about, you know, their livelihood getting thrown away if this stuff happens. But what they're saying with this recycling thing is to start cutting back, you know, rather than ban them outright, start saying, okay, we can avoid a ban by increasing our recycling efforts so that 20% more are recycled every year and just keep doing the recycling efforts. Personally, I think that, you know, the thing is it's one of those things that it's simply another thing that people need to realize is a problem. And that there needs to be public education about it so that we start...
I don't know that my life has ever been negatively impacted by plastic bags. I got to tell you.
Well,
I mean, really?
You're not a seal who gets one, like, wrapped around your neck. And you're not, like, you know... Plastic bags account for, according to the National Marine Debris Monitoring Program, it accounts for 10% of the debris that washes up on the U.S. coastline. You know, this stuff just gets dumped into the waterways. It gets dumped into our environment.
I don't dispute any of that, and I'm not indifferent to the plight of seals. I'm not a seal, though, and I'm just saying, that really, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really seem like it's killing us off. or anything.
Well,
I defy anybody to find a species that has been made extinct by plastic bags. You're not going to do it. It's not going to happen.
Well, yet.
It just doesn't. It's yet.
We keep
making. You can say that about anything. Well, you haven't been you haven't unzipped your skin and stepped out as a robot yet.
We keep making a trillion of these things every single year and then just dumping them somewhere and they don't decompose and they don't go away. I mean, you know.
Rocks don't go away. So what? I mean, seriously, you give the Earth so little. Here's the thing about environmentalists. Environmentalists give the Earth so little credit for being durable. You know, the idea that we could, like, somehow just complete, like, irrevocably, like, screw up the environment is just so arrogant. I mean, human beings don't matter. We don't matter at all. Human beings are so much less powerful than they think they are. The idea that we are just going to, you know, render, you know, the planet just unlivable is just so much poppycock. I mean, the Earth will kill us off so far in advance of that happening. We will be killed so long before we ever get to that point. I can tell you, you and I and everybody who looks and walks like us is going to be dead, and there's going to be things flying and flapping and scooting around the planet long after our species is gone. So, mankind is not nearly as powerful as he thinks he is. That's all I'm saying.
But we are still capable of making the decision to not poison it any more than we absolutely have to.
I don't really know that plastic bags are, quote, poisoning things. I think poison poisons things. I think plastic bags are just sort of there. Plastic bags are just, I mean, it's litter and maybe you shouldn't do it, but I'm just saying it just seems like we got bigger problems to worry about. You know, like the fact that, I don't know, that there's a town 2 hours from here that is filled with plutonium we're putting in the ground. That's a thing that actually kills you, like, you know, within a couple of years. A plastic bag, you know, just sort of makes your life more difficult. And I guess you could say that, you know, well, we're looking out for other creatures, whatever. But here's the thing. Other creatures, nature seems pretty capable of looking out for itself. I mean, when people talk about preserving, people say, you know, save the environment. That is just a coded way of humans saying save themselves. You know, the planet, save the planet. The planet doesn't need us to save it. When people say save the planet, that is just a way of saying save humans. But they don't want to be as outwardly selfish. They don't want to admit that it's self-interest. And so they don't want to say, like, save us. They say, save the planet, because it makes it look noble.
Frankly, I'd much rather see people die off than, say, polar bears. And if the polar bears are dying off because of stuff that we're doing wrong, I think maybe we should try and fix that.
I will guarantee, you know what? Bears were here before us. Bears are going to be here after us. We are.
Unless we fuck everything up so spectacularly that the polar bears all die.
Here's the thing. Everything dies. I mean, every species goes extinct. Every species goes extinct. And you know what? Every species that went extinct was made extinct by some process in nature. Humans are a process in nature. That's the other thing. It's like, you know, here's, and I don't mean to be all ranty about it, but it just seems, and this is another one of those things where you and I seem like we're in bizarro world, like we've swapped places here because I'm taking the sort of philosophical, cosmic, you know, almost biblical view of the situation in man's, you know, in the grand scheme of things and man's vast unimportance in terms of creation, that we are a blink of God's, we are a mote in God's eye, because if you look at the species that have existed, everything goes extinct at some point, and most of those things were driven extinct by a natural process, of which you are one. It's like an animal farm where they look in the house, and there's, I think, Napoleon the pig, voiced by Patrick Stewart, is sitting at the table, and he's wearing a tie, and he's having food brought to him, and it's the whole thing that he's an animal who's forgotten he's an animal. Guess what? Humans are animals that have forgotten that they're animals. You know, we say, well, mankind is engaging in unnatural behavior. If mankind is doing it, it's not unnatural. We are part of nature. Just because it's something that dolphins don't do doesn't mean it's unnatural.
Yeah, but we also were granted free will, so we can make the choice to not do things that are damaging. I mean, I clean my living room. I put my garbage in the dumpster. I pick up my dog's poop so that I don't, like, you know, my neighbors don't step in it on their way to their car. You know, we have the free will to make choices about the way we treat our surroundings.
Yeah, I understand that, but I guess what I'm saying is it's a zero-sum game. Like, there's... It is
not if it does things like maybe we are making things better not only for other animals but for ourselves, that maybe we'll have an assload less plastic bags cluttering up, you know, the shoreline, that we will have, you know, less crap floating, that you can, like, drive down Southeast Portland and not see just, like, plastic bags blowing in the breeze like tumbleweeds down the sidewalk. We can actually, you know, make things better because we are able to do that.
I guess what I'm saying is there's only so much energy in the world and there's only so much, so much time we have to work on things. And of all of the problems I have in my life, of the things that cause me stress, the times I've been fired, the times I've, been between places to live, or the times I was facing existential crises of self or wasn't able to get to work in the morning because, you know, it's like doohickey fell off the back of my car. None of those things were caused by plastic bags. And if plastic bags didn't exist, those problems still would have happened. So it seems like we're busy picking lint off a couch that's on fire. I mean, if we're really, really going to put effort into fixing things, I bet if you polled the average guy in the street, there's like 9 million other things we could fix that actually impact people like now, today. So that is all I'm saying. It just seems like a lot of arrogance on the part of humans to think like, here's the solution to the whole thing. It's plastic bags.
I'm not sure anyone said it was a solution to the whole thing.
I don't think it, but it's not a solution to anything. I do not believe that that is going to stem the tide of any sort of environmental damage. I mean, that is just so little and so late. There's not going to be anything solved or fixed. And I don't know, but if I had to guess, you get a guy, some guy who's much smarter than me in here, and I bet he would tell you the same thing, that human beings have such an impact on the planet that the whole plastic bag thing will not slow whatever we are doing to the planet one iota. Like, if you were to back out and look at the whole thing, not going to slow it one tiny bit. It is a wasted effort in the grand. Just like people tell you your vote matters, your vote doesn't really matter. Because, you know, just like your vote doesn't matter because it's one of 280 million votes, plastic bags don't really matter because it's one thing out of like 100 jillion things that 7 billion people are doing every day.
And, you know,
it makes people feel good.
You may very well be right. You probably are right. But the idea is if you look at, and you know this from writing your zombie economics book, you know, it can be overwhelming to look at the massive amount of problems that you may have on your plate in front of you. And what you need to do then is you itemize those problems and you go one at a time and you take each problem individually and say, what can we do to fix this?
Yeah, but you also take the problems that actually affect you on a daily basis. And I dispute that plastic bags are anywhere like in the top 50 of things that are affecting us on a daily basis. I mean, maybe they're more menacing than I thought. Maybe I'm going to be mugged by one on the way home. I don't know. I'm just saying.
The Environmental Protection Agency seems to think that they're one of our big problems. And they kind of, granted, they are a governmental agency, so they're inherently corrupt. But their basic whole job is to look at this stuff. So, if anybody was going to have an opinion that might be worth listening to, it would probably be the EPA on something like this.
Well, I guess, I mean, when you say that they're a problem, I guess I would want to know by what criteria they're a problem. I mean, when they say they're a problem, are they a problem for something else in 100 years, or are they a problem for us here now?
They're a problem for us here right now.
How is a plastic bag a problem for me here now? Tell me exactly how that's true.
Well, you live on Earth.
Okay, no. But
and
I mean,
10% of the waste, the debris that ends up on our coastlines is plastic bags.
I'm not asking, I'm saying here right now in my actual day-to-day life, how are plastic bags hurting me?
Well, how does female circumcision hurt you right now in your day-to-day life? I mean, there are a lot of horrible things in the world that need to be resolved.
Are you comparing,
that don't necessarily...
Are you comparing African women to plastic bags?
I could name 50 things that are not a problem for you right now.
Why
but
do
that
you
are
hate
problems?
African women, Don Taylor? I'm going to make a note of this.
Don hates African women.
That you believe that female circumcision and plastic bags are an equivalent issue. No, I'm going to write this down. This is going to be one of those things that I bring up relentlessly in the future. Hold on. What time is it? 12:57 p.m. We didn't do any news for like 10. We didn't do any entertainment news.
No.
You harpy.
It's not my fault. You got all ranty and argumentative.
You know the fault? It's the fault of plastic bags.
See?
Plastic bags,
they have affected you.
They denied people entertainment. All right, May 25th, circumcision.
And now you see why they're a problem for you.
Bags, Africans, no. Okay, there we go. Awesome. Wait, hold on. Where's my... we'll just end it with... There we go. Awesome. Hey, more of this merriment next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. But less circumcising. That is at rickemersonshow.com. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com or via iTunes. And so we didn't even get a chance to whore our stuff, but we'll do that tomorrow. Next hour, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian going to be joining us, also Democracy on the March. We will see you again tomorrow. That is Thursday at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday, won't you?